Political journalism super excited about the upcoming midterms, but there's a dirty little secret. 90% of them are over, right?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
Well, right now, most congressional districts have been gerrymandered out of competitive existence. I mean, you know, we've seen this from Texas to California, all over the country. So the
and
primary
plenty were gerrymandered
already,
before that.
Already,
right. But this just added to
it
that.
It just in some ways cemented it completely. So now you have a situation in which 90 to 93% of members of Congress have won real election, and that's their primary. And unfortunately, the rules of primaries are, A, they shut out independent voters in roughly
20
states.
They're partisan primaries, by definition.
Not all of them.
Not
California,
all of them. Not
Nebraska.
All of them, right. But the ones that are closed are.
Right, exactly. By definition, it has to be partisan to be closed. Other states that are open, the public hasn't yet caught up with the fact that these primaries are where all the decisions are made. So, well, look, all of us have been educated and the real election is in November.
Right.
That's almost like as American as apple pie. And yet, those November elections are an afterthought. Most members of Congress are on a beach in the Dominican Republic.
Right. Either literally
November,
or figuratively.
Literally or figuratively, because they're so uncompetitive. So there's a real movement, and this is a huge task.
A movement
task.
To do what?
Two things. Change the rules. Let every American vote in every election, period. The primary is government funded, government administered. Everybody should be able to vote in it. If the parties want to have private caucuses, conventions,
to primaries. To nominate someone or
yeah,
to figure
they want
out
to
who
do,
the
that,
person they're putting up
yeah,
is.
Do it on your own dime mm-hmm. and your own time. These are public elections, these primaries.
So let the public participate.
Everybody should be able to vote. But that's only step one. We have to change the culture. We have to educate and convince Americans that voting in primaries is not just something for the super partisan, for the hyper partisan.
Because the culture right now is
wait till November.
Right.
Wait till November. But the decisions have all been made in November.
Most of them.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably 30 congressional districts that'll be in play. And obviously presidential elections and Senate races statewide are still in play. The level of competition hasn't gone to zero.
And John, I've heard you give lots of interviews, and I want you to help my audience with this, because they're going to hear you and say, oh, wow, well, if John got his way, then everything would change instantly. And what you have said on previous interviews is, no, it would not change instantly. Don't think this is going to unlock whatever your frustrations are with contemporary American politics.
Yes.
Why?
Well, first of all, there's a myth about independent voters. People think they're moderates. People think they're in the middle. People think they're kind of this. They're not. They're as ideologically diverse as the country. They're libertarian, socialist, moderate, liberal, conservative, and everything in between. What they are is people saying, there has to be a better way than this scorched earth. Demonize your opponent.
The other myth is that they're sort of a gelatinous blob of indifference.
Yes, that they're fence sitters. They don't care. No, independence. There's research coming out of Arizona State University. Independents actually have much different social media networks than Democrats and Republicans. They want Democrats, Republicans, liberals, and conservatives, socialists, and libertarians in their orbit. They want to keep an open mind about things.
And they live in a marketplace of ideas.
Right. Independents are much more.
Whereas partisans typically, right now, siloed as they are,
exactly,
do not.
Exactly. So
that's why the parties don't want them in.
Right. They're hard to campaign to. You can't just say Trump is bad and get their vote, or Democrats are socialist communists and get their vote. You actually have to educate, engage, listen. And the candidates and the parties don't really want to do that. They'd much rather have a easy way to stoke fear in order to win. The other thing. So when you open the primaries and you let independents in, people sometimes say, oh, great, now all these moderates will get elected. No, maybe.
Maybe.
But also, here's what we found, is that there have been a number of states that have opened their primaries, and no one told independents. So turnout didn't go up. Mm-hmm. No one informed them, government or private. So now what's happening, we just passed open primaries in New Mexico, and we were part of a campaign to organize independent voters to record PSAs.
public service.
Yeah, saying, hey, we did it. It took us 10 years. We had to fight tooth and nail. We went to court. We went to the legislature. We finally won the right to vote. We got to get out and vote. And we went from 0% to 11% turnout among independents in the first election. It's a good first step. But we have to build on that. We have to create a culture in every state in which people realize that I've got to get out and vote in round one and not just in round two.
Break it down for my audience.
Yeah.
Open, totally open, closed. What are the numbers?
Well, totally open or nonpartisan primaries. I call them people's primaries.
Right.
Because they're no longer about selecting which Democrat and which Republican. It's just everybody gets to vote. The most popular candidates, regardless of party, go from the primary to the general election. We have that in California, Alaska, Washington State, and Nebraska. Then there's 30 states that have party primaries. There's a Democratic primary and a Republican primary, but independents get to choose a ballot. They get to decide, right? Now, a lot of independents don't like that because they're like, well, I want to vote for that Democrat for Senate, but I want to vote for a Republican for...
And that choice process just limits you to that...
To one party's candidates.
Right.
So open is better than closed, but people's primaries is the real game changer. But the difference between open and closed is not insignificant. There's 16 states where if you're registered to vote as an independent, you don't get to participate.
You're out.
You're out. You're completely out. And we're fighting these in every one of these 16 states. We have lawsuits going, legislative campaigns,
and when you
ballot
sue,
referendums.
On what basis are you suing?
Well, we're in early days, but right now we're in court in Maryland.
And what's the standing? I mean, what's the offense that you're trying to litigate out?
Here's what we're doing in Maryland. And when I say early days, we're looking at a lot of different avenues of attack. So don't lock me into this.
Mm, right. Okay.
But what we're looking at in Maryland is we're saying, hey, the Supreme Court has said that parties have a right to determine who gets to vote in their primary if it's a party primary. And we're saying, fine, we'll grant you that right. The reason the Supreme Court granted them that right is they said, we're a private organization. We're like the Elks Club or the Rotary Club.
The Republican and Democratic parties, right.
They said, and they won all the way to the Supreme Court. So now we're going to the state court in Maryland, and we're saying, these are private organizations. Why are you funding? Why are you paying
for
it?
Why are private organizations getting public funds to conduct their...
Private elections. We don't pay for the private elections of the Elks Club. You know, if they want to elect a new grand poobah, they leave the taxpayers out of it. So now the parties want to have their cake and eat it too. Mm-hmm. They want the public to fund and administer. I mean, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. And yet they want to be able to determine who can and can't vote in those elections. And we're trying to drive a wedge right between there.
Right. So does... If you were to succeed, does that solve or merely soften the gerrymandering problem?
I mean, gerrymandering...
It's never going to go away. Lines are going to be drawn.
Sure.
And those who are in charge of drawing the lines are going to look for preferential benefit.
Sure.
That's always going to happen.
Sure. I mean, I think we made a lot of strides in certain states, like Michigan, to get the politicians out of drawing the districts.
Right. And with independent commissions and things.
Yeah, and, right. and some
California
of them...
California went to that as well.
Yeah, and you saw that, you know...
And then they had to reverse it after Texas.
Know, so these things are not immune. And even when you have an independent commission, you still have to draw lines and there's right. going to be things. So there will never be some computer AI-driven perfection. And it's a scandal. We're the only Western democracy that allows parties and politicians... to run the process.
Mm-hmm.
The parties control election administration. They control the primary rules. They draw the lines. The FEC is three Democrats and three Republicans.
Right.
Like,
and they have election observers. Independents don't have election observers. Like, the parties do.
Right. And our whole philosophical framework for running elections in this country is called partisan parity. So you don't have one party running the elections. That would be a little too Putin-y.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Instead, you have two parties running the elections. What every other country in the world does is they have an independent electoral commission. They're the umpires. You're the baseball players.
Right.
We have the baseball players calling balls and strikes.
Right.
And I think until we are able to get at that root cause of letting the parties run the process, we're going to continue to have problems.
You have a delightful metaphor about this that I want you to share with my audience, which is, what if there was a Star Wars or Star Trek or Twilight movie, and the only people who were allowed in were Trekkies, people who dressed up like Star Wars stormtroopers, or people who were Twilight milieu.
Yeah.
That's what you're really talking about. Walk my audience through that.
Well, again, that's both a legal issue and a cultural issue. Because, again, there are laws that say unless you are a card-carrying member of a party, you're not allowed to vote in
Right, so
one.
Unless you're a Trekkie, you can't see the movie.
Right. But it's so much deeper than that.
Can't get in the movie theater.
It's the culture. We've all been brainwashed into thinking that what normal people do is they come to the election.
Only normies vote
in November.
Right.
And for most of our country's history, that was true. It's not like one of these things that's always been false. Like, we used to live in a country in which Democrats and Republicans competed in most of the country. I mean, there were tiny little places that didn't, but I mean, even South Dakota. I was talking with our spokesperson in South Dakota, very conservative Republican, and he said the worst thing that's happened for conservatism in South Dakota is the destruction of the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. There's no competition. Right. Now the Republicans, they can do anything and get elected. And what he said, and again, this is a conservative Republican saying this, there's all kinds of scandals. There's all kinds of misuse of funds. There's all kinds of laziness and stupidity.
Because nobody's watching.
Because
nobody's
there's
competing.
No competition.
Right.
And that's happened in so many places around the country where the general election is just a coronation. And the people haven't caught up with that yet, though. Although
and they feel powerless.
Yes. Yes, they do. And they're starting, though. Look at California. There was a whole big manufactured scandal in California, manufactured by political consultants who've wanted to get rid of the open primary out there for 15 years. They hate it. It makes their job so much more difficult.
Right.
In an open system, more people vote and they're more difficult to, it makes their life miserable. So they tried to manufacture a scenario in which a Republican would get elected in a blue state. Right. And it's because of the open primaries. Complete fabrication, complete false. But the story that didn't get covered is that 41% of Californians voted in the primary.
Very high.
9% of New Yorkers. These are two blue states. Right. One is a people's primary. One is a closed partisan primary. 9% turnout. In New York, 41% turnout in California. Over a million independent voters went and participated and voted for whoever they wanted. More Democrats vote. More Republicans vote. People recognize the primary is an important election. So we've seen progress on this culturally, but I can't lie to people and say all we have to do is change the laws. We have to change the whole mindset of what these elections
are. What is the composition broadly in the country, meaning not just registered voters, just eligible voters, independents, and registered voters, independents?
30 states register voters by party. 20 states have nonpartisan voter registration. So you can't really do a national thing.
We do have some survey data.
Yes, the survey data is that 48% of Americans identify as independents.
48%?
48%. That was CNN just last month. But here's something interesting. If you look at the states that have closed primaries, Pennsylvania, Florida, New York, they tend to have the surveys say 48%, but the registration is about 25%. In Pennsylvania, it's really low. It's like 12%. And we just did a poll in New York of registered Democrats.
Okay.
1,300 registered Democrats who vote, regular voters. And we said, why are you a registered Democrat? And 40% of them said, I'm not. I'm an independent. I just want to be able to vote in the primaries. 40%.
Right.
Among Latinos, only one of three said, I believe in the Democratic Party. 33%. The rest were independents, Republicans, or they didn't know. So one of the things that closed primary advocates say is they say, well, we have to keep the system closed.
Right, because we don't want people who are not philosophically aligned with us to dilute or meddle in the process.
And it's the exact opposite.
And they already are.
The closed system creates a scenario in which non-party members are coerced into joining a party that they don't believe in simply so they can vote. And the party should be embracing an open system. Then they could have a real membership role. They would know who's an actual Democrat, an actual Republican. But they don't want that.
Because it is less predictable. Because parties and candidates do, in really important races, a scoring system, 1 to 5. 1 low propensity, 5 high propensity. Yeah. And they run these numbers relentlessly. And part of that is through a partisan lens of registration and previous behavior.
Right.
And they live and die on this 1 to 5 scale.
Yeah.
You throw a bunch of independents in there, they don't know what they're counting anymore.
Right.
And it's a variable.
Yep.
And variables make consultants and those who make money off this world and those who want reliable data because they're paying the consultants a lot of money, surefire answers, they don't like variables either.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
No, 100%. I mean, New York, one of the things that's hard to talk about, let's just talk about New York, for example, but there's many other states, is that low turnout is not a bug. It's a feature. It's a design. It's not a conspiracy. It's not, it's not tinfoil hats. But consultants, campaign managers love low turnout elections because all you need to do is get your people out and one more than the other guy or gal, and you've won. You don't need more turnout. You want predictable turnout.
Staying with New York, the current mayor, Zohran Mamdani, says, hey, we're about democracy. He wants to keep the closed primary system. The previous couple of cycles, a couple of mayors back, Michael Bloomberg, defied that and wanted it to be more open.
Yeah.
So when Zohran Mamdani says we're all about democracy as democratic socialists, sort of.
Yeah, I was disappointed because I think the mayor is someone who is, like him or dislike him, he is saying, we need a new day. We need to challenge these.
And we need more to participate. We want more to participate.
We need the little guy in there. We need to challenge some of these economic monopolies. We need to challenge old ways of doing things that have created a rift in our society. Okay. So then why are you defending a Tammany Hall style political system that 85% of U.S. cities have abandoned? 85% of cities in America let everybody vote in every election. So what we're doing is we are running a campaign to ask Mayor Mamdani to attend a town hall meeting of independent voters. We'll bring out 300-400 independents. He just has to name the day and we'll produce it. Mm-hmm. And we want him to learn who these people are. 54% of independents in New York City are people of color. There's a huge number of Asian and Latino immigrants who are new citizens who come from very, oppressive governments. They don't want to join a party. That has a real meaning back in Vietnam or Venezuela or Cuba. Young people, the new generation, which Mayor Mamdani has really connected with, 56% of them are independent. So we want to change his mind about letting these people vote. There's 1.2 million independent voters in New York City. They're locked out. And we think we have a shot with the mayor.
You do.
I hope so. I mean, I think that he, I really take him at his word when he says it's time to shake some things up. Well, this is something that needs shaking up,
Well, you let us know if he says yes, because we'll watch that and we'll watch that closely. That would be a great town hall. What about what South Carolina is going through right now? Mm-hmm. Lindsey Graham, senior senator, dies suddenly. There is a process.
Yep.
But it's closed. Is it?
No, it's open.
It's open. Okay.
South Carolina has nonpartisan voter registration.
Got it. Okay.
Although the South Carolina Republican Party has filed a lawsuit.
That's where I've got that. Right.
And they filed a similar lawsuit back in 2009, which we defeated. We were a co-defendant along with the Legislative Black Caucus, the Tea Party. We brought together left and right, plus the state to defeat it. But they're at it. I mean, this is happening in Texas. in Alabama, in South Carolina, in California, in blue states, in red states, the parties, now that they're done gerrymandering,
right?
They want to close.
They want to lock in their gains.
They want to lock in their gains, and they want close.
Or how they perceive their gains to be locked in.
Right. Right. And it's ironic about Texas. I mean, if you watch any show about Texas, all they do is they say, come down here from New York. We do things differently. We got low taxes. We got low zoning. We got, you know, we don't like the New York way. We like the Texas way.
Or the California way. Right.
Right. Except when it comes to close primaries, then we want the New York way. We want to bring New York to Texas and make sure that, you know, people have to join a party in order to vote. And I think that's, it's so ironic because sometimes some of the most conservative, pro small government people advocate for these big government, intrusive, force people to join a private organization. I mean, think about that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These are conservative people saying you have to join a private organization to vote.
You've been at this a long time. Has the wind ever been more at your back?
Well, the experience is not that it's at my back. The experience is being in a wind tunnel, and it's coming at the front, from the back. I mean, the public support is through the roof. And I say this to you, and I say this to every journalist in America. Something is happening with independent voters. My experience as someone who's been talking and organizing them is that for years, they were pulling out. They didn't want to be part of the red-blue, you know, toxic
right,
show.
Right.
They were pulling away. And right. Now,
in consumer digital terminology, they were opting out.
Opting out, stepping back, saying, I'm going to focus on my kids, my job, my life, my community. But this electoral politics thing, now what they're doing, and again, these are generalizations. They're saying, oh no, I got to find a way to make my voice heard as an independent.
So there's a behavioral shift you
yes.
are detecting.
Yes. So we, for example, we had a bill for open primaries in both Maryland and Delaware. Dozens of independent voters took the day off work, got to Annapolis or Dover, testified for 2 minutes. We didn't reimburse them. We didn't write them talking points. This was not some AstroTurf effort. These were real people saying, I'm tired of having my voice ignored. I'm an independent American. I want to be able to participate. I'm going to take a day off work. I'm going to tell my legislator about it. Black, white, young, old, Latino. I mean, like, independents are on the march. So that's the back. That's the head. That's the tailwind.
Tailwind, right.
The headwind is the parties are gunning for us, both parties. And they have a lot. I don't know if you know this. They have a lot of clout in this country.
And they can raise a fair amount of money.
They have some money. Yeah.
And so what this is, getting back to that word culture, is harnessing that behavioral cultural shift you just talked about, where instead of opting out, people are trying to climb the fence to get in.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, it's not just independents. Most Democrats and Republicans don't vote in the primaries.
Right.
They wait till November. This is not limited to independents. There's a lot of just people that say, yeah, my grandfather and my father was a Democrat, so I'm a Democrat, or I'm a Republican, you know. People have to get out and vote in the primaries if they want to shape shape what their legislators do.
Right.
Because look, you know this, there are poll after poll showing 80% support for a variety of policies. Right. You know, it doesn't matter. Politicians don't listen to the 80%. They listen to the 11% that vote in the primaries.
Right.
And if we don't flip that, we're not going to get the kind of policies that Americans want.
John Updike, I appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.